there's no point in having money if you're just miserable all the time or you're working all the time. You got to have that freedom to do whatever you want. And entrepreneurs are weird. Like, I'm weird. Like, my idea of a good time is watching a baseball game. I'll watch every Yankee game that comes on. But I put myself in a position where if the Yankees play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm blocking on my calendar. So there's no meetings at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that probably seems ridiculous to people listening, but you have your own thing that you like that you can't miss for any reason, or you want to do it. So make sure you're doing whatever you want when you want to do it.
Better Than Rich Show listener, here's the deal. I've been trying to get Nathan Hirsch on the show since July of 2020, and we finally got him. So this is a guy who's been on almost 1,000 podcasts as a guest. We go into a lot of some of the specifics on how he's done that. What's really impressive about Nate, I didn't even get into this in his bio because I wanted to spend time with him picking up on the nitty-gritty of delegation, but he co-founded freeup.net in 2015 with $5,000. And he ended up scaling that company to $12 million in revenue. And he actually had an exit. So within 4 years, he exited that company for eight figures. Imagine taking a $5,000 investment, turning it into $12 million. Super cool story. He's told that story on many other podcasts on those 900 plus episodes that he's done. I chose not to get that story for you today because I wanted him to just give the tips and the tools and practical tactical advice that you deserve to get. So I did my best to draw that out of him. And I think you're going to really love today's episode with Nathan Hirsch. Get ready, check it out. Pen and paper, I assure you, you're going to love this episode on the Better Than Rich Show. And by the way, I mentioned at the end, we're doing free 90-day delegation plans because I know Nate talks a little bit about delegation and using virtual assistants. If that's something that is important for you, you could take me up on my offer for a delegation plan, which is free. I will hop on Zoom. You get a 25-page workbook and you go to betterthanrich.com/90-day plan. That's 90-day plan. And we would be fired up to do that with you, especially after you listen to some of the thing Nathan talks about, like getting on podcasts and delegating his inbox. He goes through a masterclass on how to get your inbox delegated, hiring processes. I mean, it's really a fantastic content. So betterthanrich.com/90-day plan. Get ready for Nathan Hirsch on the Better Than Rich Show. Welcome to the Better Than Rich Show with your hosts, Andrew Biggs and Mike Abramowitz. The Better Than Rich Show helps ambitious leaders who are on a mission to leave the world better than they found it, change their perspective on what's important, increase their income and impact, and systemize their life and business. If you've ever struggled with finding your purpose, have felt disconnected or distracted, or found yourself going through the motions, this show will remind you that what you do matters and will re-inspire you to chase your highest dreams. It's time for you to become better than rich. Welcome back to the Better Than Rich Show. I'm your host today, Mike Abramowitz, and I am in for a treat. I've been trying to get this guy on our show and serve you for the better part of like 6 months at this point, maybe even longer. And I'm really fired up to be here with Nathan Hirsch. Nathan, welcome to the Better Than Rich Show podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Sorry it took too long. I don't know if you rescheduled on me, but I know I rescheduled on you a few times, so I apologize for that.
Oh, it was a back and forth, and you had a newborn child, so there was a perfect reason and excuse as to why we had to reschedule and find a time, and then you were taking like a stint of a break into the new year, so, but we're here, and I've been telling our community and our listeners, I've been seeding this conversation for a while, and really excited to dive in, and as you know, as I shared with you, and as listeners, you know, my business partner, Andrew, and I, we have our virtual assistant services. So our AI-powered virtual assistant team, there's maybe about 65 of you right now as we're recording this that are using our services. And Nathan has tremendous experience and knowledge in this idea of outsourcing and the idea of delegation. I would say he's one of the experts in the industry. So I want to dive right in because you have proprietary knowledge. I'm a client of your outsource school with working with offshore teams, specifically in the Philippines. That's where predominantly most of ours are. We have a couple in Pakistan and India, but predominantly in the Philippines. If our clients are using a service and they are using Filipino virtual assistants for doing work in their business, can you rant? I asked Kasim, he was on our podcast, and he just ripped and dispelled all the myths about offshore workers. So I want to start there, having you just do your rant as to why you prefer Filipino staff, what that's done for you, why offshore work has been something that has been helpful for you in your business, and just go on your riff. I've heard you riff on this on other shows. I want you to do your passionate riff here, and then we'll go into another direction.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what you can use them for, I'm living proof that you can hire them for very high-level roles. I had an eight-figure business that we sold where VAs were running every part of the business. We had 30 full-time VAs in the Philippines. They were doing everything from sales calls to matching up clients with their freelancers to resolving issues and the customer service that goes with that. Our bookkeeper was probably one of the best bookkeepers you'll ever find. I put him against any U.S. bookkeeper. Our billing was on point. People got paid on time. All our books were clean and on time. I've even pushed the limits with Outsource School. I have a VA that goes on podcasts for me. So they don't pretend to be me, but they're a high-level VA. They have a lot to share and offer. And I've had them go on podcasts and promote Outsource School and even do webinars. So I like to push the limit of what virtual assistants can do. And it all comes down to finding the right person and interviewing and onboarding, training and managing them. You know that this because you've gone through Outsource School, but we're firm believers in finding that vector of someone with skill, attitude, and communication, setting really great expectations up front. So they know exactly what they're getting into. They want to be a part of what we're building. And then once we get them going, be able to train them quickly, valuing our time. So we know very fast if they're not a good fit. And then motivating them, getting them to, we call it our BARF method, buy in, show appreciation, build relationships, create a family inside of your business. We joke that we have them sign life contracts, which isn't really true, but we want to have them with us for as long as they want to be a virtual assistant. And that's what we've been able to do in our companies because we know and we learned from our Amazon business early on that turnover just crushes small businesses. So when we find a really good person, we find that A player, we want to keep them around for years to come.
And one of the things that I love is you, just like us, is we've tried to create as easy as possible for someone, a busy entrepreneur, to install a virtual assistant or a team of virtual assistants into their business. So let's assume that I'm listening to this and I'm like, Nathan, I understand. I hear what you're saying. I definitely am sold. I'm going to go through an agency or I'm going to go through a free up or I'm going to go through a Better Than Rich Services or Upwork or Fiverr, whatever. I would say Upwork and Fiverr, you have to really like do your own vetting process and research where free up and Better Than Rich VAs, we've already vetted. We have already hired and interviewed and made sure that these people are qualified. Now, I want you to help our listener dispel the myth on why should I let go of control of items in my business that I know I can do better than these other people and then pay maybe even a premium to a company like a FreeUp. Like FreeUp takes money. Why don't I just do it on my own? Better Than Rich. You guys have a premium charge. I could just do it on my own. What is the advantages of going through another company that has already sourced people? That's number one. And number two is when I have decided to delegate some things, what would be your counsel to someone to let go of control of those tasks that maybe they say I could do a better job than others at those tasks?
Yeah, I would argue that most entrepreneurs think they're good at things they're not really good at. And most entrepreneurs are really good at one, two, maybe three core things. And other tasks, maybe they've done them over and over and they have them on repeat and they can do them half asleep. But when someone else who's really good at that task, who has a background in that skill, can take ownership of that task and even build that task and make it better, which is what we look for. We look for builders, people who don't just do it our way and do it that way for the next 5 years. They take what we've done and make it more efficient, make it better. That's a much better way to approach your business. And even if you are, let's say, the best at every possible thing, which I think is crazy, but let's say hypothetically you are, you're just going to run out of time eventually. And you're building a business that's completely dependent on your time. And the second that you stop working, your business stops. And both of us know, we have kids. You said your son was in the ER and thankfully he's okay with all that. And I just had a newborn, stuff comes up. I'm going to a doctor appointment right after this. So you have to be able to get away from your business and continue to have your business operating at a high level. And if you're a really good entrepreneur, your business is growing without you actually being there. And so you can focus on the high level stuff, the strategy, the hiring, stuff like that, but putting people in place to succeed and build and take ownership of those tasks so that your time continues to get freed up. And what I mean with FreeUp, I was FreeUp 24/7 for 4 years. Now I have a different approach where I'm building a portfolio of businesses. Businesses fail, that hopefully they don't, and luckily they haven't yet, but they could. And being able to have a lot of different businesses really forces you to say, hey, I can't run five businesses at the same time, even if I want to. I need to hire operators, put them in there, surround those operators with a good team, and really go from there. So that's my point there. And yeah, I mean, people like you and me back in the FreeUp days our whole thing is creating processes for hiring really good people. That's what we do. And hiring is a skill. You can either learn how to hire, or you need to rely on other people to do that hiring for you. And it's the same thing with Facebook ads. You can spend the next year learning how to be a Facebook ad expert, or you can hire an agency that comes in. They have their own systems, they have their own processes, and there's pros and cons to doing both. But a lot of entrepreneurs find, hey, I'm not good at hiring. I'm never going to be good at hiring, or I could just use some extra assistance. And that's why they go to your company or FreeUp or something else. And if you're going to the Upworks and Fiverr, you just have to have your process down and really create a funnel, because you're going to go through a lot more applicants than if someone just goes directly to you.
So this is really good. So let's assume I hired this operator and I put him into a system that is not really dialed in. Like, there's no playbooks, there's no SOPs. I haven't really followed Dan Martell's buy back your time methodology. I don't have camcorder method installed in my business. What would you say to that business owner? Okay, I'm sold. I need to find some who's. What do you say to the person to say, I want to install these who's into a business that is actually functioning? Where do you suggest they, like, the systems, where are your places, and what is your counsel there?
Yeah, so it's really two different things. The VAs are different than the operators I was talking about. The VAs, they're followers. They're there to follow your system, your process. If you don't have one, you can't hire a virtual assistant unless you're paying a premium to some agency that's coming in with a process. And even then, I would argue that kind of process might not work for every single business out there. So the VAs, they're followers. I'm not hiring a VA without a process. During the early days of FreeUp, when we worked a lot with a lot of e-commerce sellers, we would have people that would hire a VA and say, go find me profitable products to sell on Amazon. That doesn't work. You have to have a real system of going through, let's say, wholesale lists and finding that profitable product on Amazon. So VAs, you don't hire without a process. The operator is different. When Connor and I start a business, we don't start a business without an operator. Our bookkeeping brand, Accounts Balance, is a good example. We're not bookkeepers. So we can't run a bookkeeping business without one main bookkeeper running operations. And we wanted to hire someone who had already been there before. They had already worked for a bigger bookkeeping service. They already knew what that looked like. Now, we're taking a lot of risk and we're putting someone in a position to either succeed or fail, but they know that going in. We want someone with an entrepreneur mindset that wants to build, that knows this isn't the most secure job in the world, that knows if they fail or they get sick for a month in month two, that they either can't be the operator anymore or the business is going to fail. So that's a much more different position. And we found that with Steven Snyder in Trio SEO, our SEO business, same thing. He's an SEO master. He worked for a bigger agency that was pumping out content. So we want him to come in. And you're also giving up more than you would for, let's say, a W-2, whether it's profit share, whether it's paying them, even if the company's not profitable yet. It's not completely like all the risk is on them, where they don't get paid until the business does well. They're not a partner like that. They're that hybrid of a partner and someone who has more of a stable job. That's what we look for. I have one more thought off of that. What was I going to say? I don't know. Keep going. But that's kind of the main point, is those are the operators that we look for. And we really set the expectation of them up front. They know exactly what they're getting into, but they love it. That's what they want to do. They want to be an entrepreneur without the huge liability and crazy stress of being an entrepreneur. Those are the kind of people that we look for.
This is great. So you struck a couple things here. So I'm glad you went in the direction. I've heard you say that, where you have the followers and then you have the experts, right? Like, the experts, I'm hiring you to do the thing versus I'm hiring you to follow the thing that I already built. I know you said the word processes. I said the word systems. At Better Than Rich, we define a system in a business as a series of processes, policies, and technologies that aid in the goal of the business. We define a process as if-then statements. Policies is the written documentation, and technology are the tools, mechanism that's to support the processes and the policies. How do you define processes when you're saying a business, I wouldn't bring on VAs if I don't have a process in place? So number one, how do you define that? Number two, what is the counsel you would give to someone if they're like, all right, Nathan, sounds good. Where do I start to start building out processes and systems in my business? Because it's been a one-stop solopreneur shop. And now I want to be a leveraged solopreneur by adding on some team. How do I do that?
Yeah, I remember my other thought from before. So let me jump back and then I'll jump to that. So let's say that you are a new entrepreneur. Let's say you don't have a savings. You've never accomplished anything. That's going to be a really hard pitch to find an operator who's putting all his eggs essentially in your basket, but you don't have any kind of proof, any company that you've built before, sold before. You don't have a safety net of money to pay them if things go bad. That's a way different pitch than someone like Connor and I, who have gone through an exit, who, hey, if the business does fail, we're going to still make sure this person doesn't get screwed over at the end of the day. And if the business takes 5 months to get profitable, we're still going to pay the person because we're taking the risk. We're looking at it as a much longer term play. So you got to figure out what can you actually bring to the table to get that operator to trust you, because you're putting a lot of trust in them, but they're putting that same trust in you. That was my point from before. So yeah, in terms of processes, I have what I call my 3 month rule. And this goes for not only me, but also people on my team, higher level people on my team. I don't want them doing any process longer than 3 months before creating an SOP and teaching someone else below them to do it. And that the first month you're figuring things out, you're throwing things against the wall, you're learning, you're trying to see, hey, what podcast talks about this podcast that I can steal nuggets from and put it into my system. Number two, you're just doing it over and over. If it's a daily process, weekly process, and you're trying to break it, you're seeing what could go wrong, what are the things I haven't thought of, what are those important reminders that you want to add to the SOP. Month three, you're creating SOP, you're hiring the person, and you're training them and getting it off your plate by the end of the third month. And that's really how I look at a process. If you create something on day one and hire someone to do it, you can do that, but you better have someone who can build and really take ownership of that SOP. And that's usually more than your average virtual assistant.
So I'm going to push back a little bit. I'm so busy. I'm the entrepreneur. I'm a solopreneur. I'm doing everything. I'm wearing all the hats in my business. I'm in charge of lead gen, conversion on sales, and onboarding my new clients and retaining my clients and getting the LTV. I'm a one-man shop. You want me to sit here and document all my processes as I'm trying to figure this stuff out? What would you say to that person? Number one, how would you go about documenting these? Maybe you could actually give a specific example of something you've done in the past or something you've coached a student or someone on your team to do where it's like, this is a real example that a listener can say, wow, I can like grab up my pen and paper right now and say, ooh, start to finish, this is how, even though I'm really busy, I can still make a new process and a new system in my business a priority.
Yeah. If you're a sole entrepreneur and there's no one else on your team, guess what? You have to find time to make these processes. And I mean, the 3 month rule isn't a hard fact either. Like it might only take you 2 months. If it's something super simple and you can do it all in a few weeks, great. But usually a good process for a real part of the business is going to take that long just to iron out the kinks, and you have to do it. That's the only thing that you should be doing. When we started FreeUp, my inbox was really the support inbox, and everything went to that. And by year two, we moved off of that. But when we started, I had to hire a VA to handle my inbox because we had clients over the world. So I was getting freelance requests at like 2 a.m. We wanted to land those clients. We wanted to handle issues quickly. So the first VA I hired was Jane, who did my emails. And I created an SOP, and we structure all our SOPs the same way. It's the why, the steps, and the important reminders. So the why breaks down, why are you doing this task? What does success and failure look like? For emails, it was, hey, we want all responses within 6 hours, 5 hours, whatever it is. Why is that? Because people will convert better as clients. People will stick around. They'll be happier if we resolve issues quickly. So what is like the schedule that you need to work? How do you prioritize emails? Pretty much the why of every situation. Then you dive into the steps. So you actually log in, and what's the first thing you do? You look at all the unread emails and you do a quick scan from the time that you got on to the last email that you responded to, and you see if there's any immediate urgent things. If someone's pissed off, if someone didn't get paid, if there's something that stands out as a something that should be prioritized, and that's a thing that you handle first. And then I wrote out all these templates of the easiest situations. We started off with those. If someone, for like our Amazon business, I did the same thing. If someone says, hey, how long until I get this order, or what's my tracking number, or something simple where you can quickly look it up, copy, paste it, template, send it. Those are the easiest things to see if the person can actually do the job, because if they can't handle those easy emails, they're definitely not going to be able to handle some client screaming, yelling, swearing at them over some issue. So I would start with that and then build up from there and start adding different templates to those step by steps. I would also add in the step like, hey, leave it in draft for me to review before it goes out. And then eventually I'd remove that step once I trust the VA and have them actually just be able to send it without me. Finally, are the important reminders. So for us, important reminders could be your biggest client. Hey, if my biggest client emails me, like shoot me a Slack, don't respond to that, or maybe respond to that and just say, hey, I've escalated this to Nate. He'll get back to you when he wakes up in the morning. something like that. It could be some kind of legal notice, an email from my accountant, anything that's just higher level than I want them to handle. And those, you don't want to assume those things. You want to put them in the important reminders at the end. So that's how I would structure emails. It's the why are you doing this task? What does success and failure look like? What are the step-by-steps? What templates do I use? What software? What order do I go? And then the important reminders of things that they don't do for any reason or things that they really have to take into consideration on a day-to-day basis.
Beautiful, dude. How have you modified, or if you were going to give counsel with these templates, leveraging AI? Because that's something that my inbox manager, Carl, is doing for me, is he has my writing style and my tone. So if he's responding as me, he's responding with my AI. And then if he's responding as him, then he's still using GPT to make sure it's like formatted and grammar correct and whatnot. Are you installing AI into these processes or this process specifically? If so, how? And then, you know, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how does Jane know to respond as Jane versus how does Jane know to respond as Nate?
Yeah, it's a good question. So my rule is to never pretend to be me. So it's always, I always try to make people feel like they're one step away from me because they are. And so Jane will respond like, hey, I'm Jane. I'm Nathan's assistant. Here's the solution, whatever. And make it very clear that if all hell breaks loose, like they can still get a hold of me. They could still like have something where I'm looking at it. Or, hey, Nate told me to tell you this. And maybe it's something that I sent her and she's like copy and pasting on Slack or whatever, or into the email or whatever. And AI can be any part of it. I mean, you could take those templates and give it to AI and get multiple versions of it so people feel like they're not talking to a robot who just gives the same response every single time. If a new situation comes in, you can use AI to summarize it. And let's say someone sends me like a big paragraph of stuff, I like to break it down so I respond to each point. So by the time I'm done, every part of the email has been handled and there's no more back and forth. We use it a lot for our marketing and content processes where we repurpose content, right? I have so much content that I've used. So in 3 months, when we're going to use the same French fry story, I have a story of I became an entrepreneur because I didn't want to, or because I wanted to be able to buy French fries when I went snowboarding and my parents didn't let me. They can take that story and turn it into 50 different versions of it for Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And then you have AI save them a lot of time doing it. So just a few examples.
Those are great examples. I appreciate this. I appreciate that we went in this direction. I have a couple of curiosities when it comes to now that you have installed these VAs into your business, you put these systems in place. How do you counsel for yourself, your team, or for someone listening, what deems high value activities now that they've essentially offloaded those low value activities? How do you know that you're actually spending time on things that move your business? You seem like a formula type of guy or a process type of guy. Like, what is your drop-down menu that you say, okay, if I'm doing these things, I know they're high value. And if I'm doing these things, then I probably need to delegate these as fast as possible. How do you decipher that?
Yeah. So for me, anything like hiring related and what is the next best hires, who are the next operators we need, what team is short, like I consider that high value and something that I'm good at and something that I'll spend time at. So I'm involved in that. Even if I'm not doing the interviews, I'm there helping to read the job posting, consult with the operator because we have a lot more hiring experience than the operator. So they might say, hey, we need this, this, and this. And we might come in with a different approach based on our experience or what the pay rate should be or anything like that. Anything in terms of the marketing and the direction of it, that's where I try to spend a lot of my time. I try to stay out of operations and more towards working with my marketing team. I have a marketing team that does a lot of my content, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, stuff like that. So working with them and getting them to speak in my voice and be able to repurpose stuff and come up with new ideas, that'll probably change and go down over time. But right now, that's where I'm very focused on. Anything like dealing with accountants and lawyers and legal entities and partnership documents, that stuff that I consider, whether I'm good at it or not, something that you just have to do as an entrepreneur. And yeah, high level meetings. So whenever we talk about, hey, how many clients can we add for this business? I'm fortunate enough to have businesses where we usually set maximum clients per month and we book those up. And like Trio SEL, for example, is booked out until March. So we're trying to figure out, hey, can we add 2 clients for April, 1 client for March, whatever it is, those type of meetings as well, because we've been in too many situations in our early entrepreneur years where we grew too fast. And that's great, but it's not so great on operations if you don't have stuff down. So whenever we have a newer business, we'd always rather grow a little slower than we could than too fast and break everything. That's where I spend my time. And that 3 month rule, you have to push it on people in your company. Because just like entrepreneurs fall into that trap where like, I can do this task, I'm going to do it forever. people on your team do the same thing and they're scared to give it up. They push back on giving it up. So we try to get everyone in this mentality. When we give them something, we're like, hey, 5 months from now, you're not going to be doing this task anymore. You're going to be overlooking someone doing this task. And we make them commit to that. That's a big thing that we're always pushing. And just like you'll run out of capacity, our operators would run out of capacity if we didn't push that.
So I have a follow-up to that. Very simple question is your meeting structure. What is your cadence? Do you model like a traction model or scaling up model or something proprietary that you created? So that way you have some sort of accountability structure in place for these conversations. So that way it doesn't die on the vine.
Yeah, I've read Traction. We definitely pick and choose from different stuff like that and have our own system for it. Yeah, we have these meeting agenda documents that throughout the week, anyone could throw something in. And then we go in and organize it based on priority. And then we assign KPIs or we assign projects to the right people based on that. And then the next meeting, we follow up to see what's been going on with those projects. So it's not exactly Traction, but similar concept.
Great. All right. I want to take a little bit of a pivot here with this conversation. So one of the things that we've been teaching is something we call the Time Rich Six. We hit on a few of them already, which the Time Rich Six is boundaries, communication guidelines, systems, playbooks, team, and tech. So that's something that we teach inside of our community. We hit on like the systems and playbooks and the team, a little bit of the tech with AI. I'd like to hear from you, Riff, on like the boundaries of communication guidelines. You're a dad, multiple businesses, multiple streams of income. You work because you love to, not because you have to. You have the freedom. How have you structured, number one, the boundaries, which is what is considered out of bounds when someone is trying to get your attention? And then number two is what are the communication guidelines for text or email, for a live phone call, for hopping on Zoom with you, grabbing your attention? So number one, how have you created the boundaries and what are those boundaries? And number two, how have you created communication guidelines and parameters for the different relationships of clients and prospects and talent that's trying to grab your attention?
Yeah. Okay. In terms of, let's start with podcasts. So I used to go on as many podcasts as I probably could. I once had a week where I did 5 podcasts a day for 5 days, so 25 podcasts in the week, and I was pretty dead after that. So I don't do that anymore. I'm very selective on what podcasts I go on. I only go on podcasts with over 150 episodes, with the exception of like people I really know or people that I know are crushing in the space, or I see some kind of like partnership or potential outside of that. But there's so many people that become podcast hosts and then a month in, they decide they don't want to have a podcast anymore. And that just wastes a lot of your time if you're constantly going on new shows. Off of that, I really don't do Zoom calls. I refuse to do them. I will really only take calls if I'm walking the dogs or I can be anywhere. So you would have to be like some gigantic client or big influencer or something out of the realm to convince me to do a Zoom call. And I'll just refuse to do that. And then networking calls, I find time for a few a month. I probably do 4 or 5 a month, where before I was doing like 2 or 3 a day. And I'm very picky on that too. I won't give out my calendar unless there's got to be some kind of purpose or some way that I see us fitting. If you're running like a healthcare company, that doesn't really align with anything that I'm doing. You might be an awesome person, but I don't have necessarily time for that. I'm also retired from going to any in-person events or conferences. I just don't want to do it. I don't have to do it. I can grow my businesses without it. I used to hustle and go to a lot of conferences. So zero work travel and no plans of changing that. I'm happy to attend things remote. If there's some kind of big summit or something and it makes sense, I could do that. So I cut that out. And then clients, I usually always talk to clients. I mean, people on my team to talk to first, but I'm a pretty fast talker and I consider myself a good problem solver. So there is a problem or there is an issue, I'm usually able to fix it pretty quickly without spending like an hour on the phone with someone. And they're busy too. They're not trying to talk to me all day. So I've never really had a problem with that. A, my businesses don't cause that many problems, knock on wood. So there's not that many like angry people that need to talk to me. And two, if there is a problem, I just talk fast and fix it and propose solutions and try to make it so people are happy relatively quickly. And yeah, partner stuff, we have a partner manager. So I don't really talk to partners. If someone's interested in being a partner, I just direct it to them and they handle it from there. And we have a good structure for it. And I'm trying to think like if people reach out to me for hiring, I have hiring managers. So I have a canned message. Hey, I'm not the one that handles it. Here's directions to apply. My team handles it. Can't share why you made it or didn't make it. Like that's all on my team. So let me know if I left anything out or if there's something else you want to know how I handle. But that's how I've restricted my time that I didn't do 2 years ago.
This is great. So I have definitely follow-ups here. The first one is if someone did not create these rules of life and they have given out their personal cell phone and they have been in the habit of hopping on Zoom with people and they've been in the habit of getting interruptions consistently. The first audience that comes to my mind is a real estate agent who it's like, if I don't pick up the phone, I starve. Of course, I can't. It sounds nice for you, Nate, but not for me as an entrepreneur. What would you say to this individual who hears that and just calls like, sounds good for you, brother, but that's not going to work for me? What would you say to that?
Yeah, the real estate agent's tough. I've always said that it's something I could never do for that exact reason. You're kind of on call 24/7 and you really got to build a team and have you not be the first point of contact. But that's a whole nother conversation. That specifically is a tough one.
Riff on that for just a second. What do you mean by that? Because the agent is under the impression that nobody else can do what I do, so therefore I have to do it. But you're saying I would have a buffer, I would have a person. I say the same thing, but I'd love to hear you say it differently potentially.
Yeah. I'm hesitant to speak as a real estate agent because I've never done it. But if it was me, I would set up a VA that I would set up like two or three VAs that could answer my phones and text 24/7 and just be like, hey, I'll take down your information, or hey, let me set up this showing with Nate. Here's his availability. What time works for you? So you don't want to turn away leads. You don't want them to go to another agent because you didn't pick up the phone, but you also don't need to respond all the time. And you're having people set up showings around their schedule, but also factoring in your schedule. It's not drop everything. But my other point that kind of builds off this is there's a time and a place for hustle. Like if you're in your 20s and you're trying to go big, like that's what I did. Like I hustled for 4 years in FreeUp. I went to every conference. I went to every podcast. Like there's a time and a place for that. As long as you understand that a lot of businesses fail. And there has to be an end game where you eventually get out of that. You can't hustle for forever. You'll burn yourselves out. So if I didn't sell FreeUp and I hustled for 4 years, we got it to an extremely profitable place where it was a great business, where I just would have had to hire more people and really just do what I'm doing now and cut back on the conferences or hire people to go to conferences or whatever. You can hustle to a point. It's harder to do when you have a family and other stuff, easier to do when you're younger and have less responsibilities and you could take more risks. But you have to have that. What does that end game look like? How long are you actually going to do it?
Yeah, what I heard you say is, I know my priorities. I know what to say yes to, and I know what to say no to. And when I'm saying no to these live calls constantly coming in, I'm saying yes to being present with the things that matter most to me. What are those for you? Like, how have you come up with your priorities to say, this is what matters most to me, and this is why I need to protect my time?
I mean, what matters most to me is pretty easy, like family, friends, fun. Like if you're not having fun at this point in your life and you've had any kind of success as an entrepreneur, you're doing it wrong, right? I mean, what's the point of working so hard if you can't enjoy it? But I mean, business, it's pretty simple. If it's stuff that's going to lead to clients and lead to sales and lead to expansion of the business, I'm usually open to it in some way. If it's something that I don't see something behind, or it's not in line, or it's someone that I don't feel like has the same values as me, I'm quicker to turn it down knowing that maybe there was some opportunity I didn't see. And I'm also like, there are people that, and I know this because when I was young and hustling and I was a nobody, I was pitching people, and there are people that are jerks to you and they reject you in what, in my opinion, is the wrong way. I try to be like very nice to people. Podcasts, for example, if people ask me to come on, hey man, get back to me when you have 150 episodes. Like I'm not going anywhere. Would love to chat then. And I explain to them exactly why. So for me, there's a difference between just being like an a-hole about it and just being like, hey, like, this is the system I've set up and there's a method behind it. I'm not just having fun rejecting people. I have a real purpose behind what I'm doing.
Great answer. I love this. I absolutely love this. I think this might be one of my final questions, and then I'll see if there's another direction before we head to our final three questions and we'll start wrapping up. You said you guested on 900 podcasts. So my curiosity, and you said 25 in a week, 5 in a day. Why did you choose that methodology for you to dedicate your time to? What was so powerful for that? And if I'm listening right now, what might be some strategies that, you know, especially with our virtual assistant team, like obviously you have, there's FreeUp, there's other services, but this is something we do. I'm on a stint right now of getting on 100 shows as a guest. I'm at like 39 right now since September. So September to March. So I have a little bit, we're recording this January, so I have a little bit of work to do, but we're 39% of the way there. But the virtual assistant team, there's a process to do in this modeling a lot of what you teach in outsource school, which is why I became a client, to find your SOP and model it and put my spin on it. But number one, why podcast as a medium? And number two, if our clients are listening to this and using our services, what might they be able to do from your SOPs compared to some of the stuff that we're already providing to them that you could share?
Yeah. So podcasts just check a lot of boxes. By going on podcasts, it's good for networking. You get backlinks. You get in front of thousands of people at once. You get content that you can repurpose in 100 different ways. So for me, it's just a great way to do a lot of things in a 1 hour time block. Or, I mean, I know you and I like you, and this is a good podcast, but I've had podcasts that I've gone on and I've said, hey, I'll do your podcast, but we got to limit it to 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So you got to control your time too, but it can lead to a lot of different things that you can use it in different ways. And it's all about getting customers. I think it moves the needle. I mean, when I started going on podcasts, there weren't that many business podcasts. Now there's a lot more, but I saw it as a different way to get in front of people that other people weren't doing. And whenever I find that, I like to double down on that. And it's a good way if in your niche to become well-known. Like I was in the e-commerce space for FreeUp and I had to start. And so I went on every e-commerce podcast. Well, all of a sudden, I knew everyone in the e-commerce space. Everyone in the e-commerce space was listening to me, or I should say all the influencers in the e-commerce space. And we had backlinks on all the top e-commerce softwares and stuff like that. So I went on this one-year e-commerce podcast tour, and all of a sudden, we're everywhere. And you can do that in your own niche. If you're a real estate agent in Denver, which is where I live, find every local Denver podcast and guest on it, and you're probably going to get a lot of business and be connected with a lot of good people in your niche. So that's how I kind of approach podcasts. And for me, I try to show the value. I try to make it as easy as possible for the host. I have a one pager people can grab if they go to outsourceschool.com/list, which is the same thing I send to all hosts. It's got bio, headshots, questions, links, just making it as easy as possible. I've got different pitches you can grab if you buy my podcast outreach formula at outsourceschool.com/podcast. And they're authentic. They're me. It's not me pitching or hard selling or talking about how awesome and I'll be the best guest you ever had. It's, hey, this is what I can bring to the table. I'd love to be considered. If you need me, if there's some way I can apply, would love to do it. And I follow up a few times. I keep it pretty basic.
Crushed it, man. I really appreciate you making the time and allowing me to just go for it. Rapid fire asking these questions. Is there anything that I did not ask you today that you said, I'd like to capture that, or if we could hit on, that'd be cool. Obviously, we went in a lot of tactical direction. We didn't get into you as a human, you as a man, you as a husband, you as a father, what your inspiration was. A lot of people know my origin story. My dad owns a plumbing business and I watched him work 6 days a week. So I didn't want to do that. So that's why creating time freedom has really been important to me, so I could be a more present father. So if you wanted to capture any of that, or if not, no sweat. I just wanted to at least give you the space to riff on anything that we didn't capture that you think could be helpful as far as context goes.
So I'm on a mission to make entrepreneurship simpler. And that's what I put into, that's what I put into all my content. And it comes down to hiring, which is why we have Outsource School. It comes down to bookkeeping, which is why we have accounts balance. And it comes down to being everywhere or being in the right places, which is where Trio SEO and SEO comes into. And I think a lot of people overcomplicate entrepreneurship. I know when I was in high school and my parents were teachers, I grew up and had to work for anything I wanted, whether it was a video game, car, whatever. But I had all these internships and they taught me the basics. It was numbers, customer service, sales, and business isn't that much more complicated than that. So I try to simplify everything in everything that I do in the business that I start and the lessons I teach people. And feel free to follow me on social media if you want more of that.
That's great, brother. We like to ask every guest three questions before we part ways, and then we can see if there's any additional ways that you want to have people stay in touch. But question number one is, what do you think the world needs most today?
Just nice people. I don't know. I feel like for me, it's just treating people. Like, I've had people I fired. I've had people that I dropped as clients and I didn't want to hurt them. They didn't want to hurt me. Like, I did my best to just end in good terms as possible. And that's just how I approach it. And there's been people that have screwed me over throughout the years, whether it's like a loan that they didn't pay back. And I could spend the next 5 years being resentful and going after them. But at some point, you just let stuff go and move on. And life is short and things don't necessarily matter as much as you think it is. So that's my approach.
This question number two is, what are 1 to 3 books that you think people should read?
Yeah, I got Tools of Titan back there. Yeah, that's my main one. It's got a lot of really good lessons about, like, business is great, but there's also stuff about personal finance and stuff about health, which I'm a big believer in and focus my time on. So that's big. Traction, which you mentioned, that's a good one. I think I have that back there as well. Trying to think of a good one on there. Yeah, Russell Brunson's books are all back there too. It's a good starting point. I have my team read that just for content and story hook offer and all that kind of stuff. So those are 3 good ones.
It's great. Great. Third question we'd like to ask, Nate, is, what does it mean to you to be better than rich?
For me, it's just freedom of time. I can just do anything I want wherever I want to. We do a nanny share and my neighbor just stopped by and said, hey, do you want to go snowboarding on Monday? And I just moved a bunch of stuff on Monday and we go snowboard on Monday. So for me, there's no point in having money if you're just miserable all the time or you're working all the time. You got to have that freedom to do whatever you want. And entrepreneurs are weird. Like, I'm weird. Like, my idea of a good time is watching a baseball game. I'll watch every Yankee game that comes on. But I put myself in a position where if the Yankees play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm blocking on my calendar. So there's no meetings at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that probably seems ridiculous to people listening, but you have your own thing that you like that you can't miss for any reason, or you want to do it. So make sure you're doing whatever you want when you want to do it.
The only Yankees baseball anyone should watch is like the 90s baseball with Wade Boggs and El Duque and, you know, Mariano Rivera, Joe Girardi as catcher. But anyway, Nate, I'm sure people are going to want to stay in touch. I know you seeded them throughout the episode. Where would you like to direct people if they want to stay in touch with you or learn more about what you're up to and also maybe even use some of your services or whatnot?
Yeah, whatever social media channel you use, find me, Nathan Hirsch. I'm pretty easy to find. I post content every day, whether it's Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, you name it. And if you're interested in any of my businesses, whether it's Outsource School, Accounts Balance, True SEO, go right to our website. You can book a call with our team. You can get a quote, sign up, whatever it is. And we have a lot of free resources there as well.
Nate, man, can't thank you enough. I knew you'd bring so much value. One of my promises I made to you when we started before I click record, I said, I'm going to do my best to try to ask you good questions. How did I do?
You did good. It's funny that you said that because I was talking to my video editor today and I was like, I'm going to push every podcast I'm on now to ask different questions. And I probably need to change up the ones on my one pager. So you're my starting point for that. I appreciate it.
Yes. All right. I wanted to make sure I added at least some value to you because as a guest, it's like going through the same thing over and over again. I want to add a little variety to your life as a gift to you. The easiest thing I could do. Listener, thank you for tuning in. As this airs, we are going through a rebrand from Better Than Rich to Time Rich. And you'll probably see like the Time Rich 6. You'll see some of that information out there. Just keep your eyes peeled for that. And if you want, we're also booking, we're offering free 90-day delegation plans right now. That's our like offer to you. If you want to like pick apart some of what Nate's talking about, some of what we've been talking about on the show, you could go to betterthanrich.com/90-day plan and book your free consultation and we'll create a roadmap for you. And then if it makes sense for our team to take care of all your delegation needs, we will. If not, you at least know how to offload those low value tasks for the next 90 days. So again, thanks, Nate. Thanks, listener. And as always, leave today better than you found it. Till next time, we'll see you then. Cheers. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram at @better_than_rich. And join our Facebook group at The Better Than Rich Show. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time. And remember, leave today better than you found it.